Welcome, folks, to the first episode of Dan's Dabble and Babble in 2022. I am thrilled for this episode for a lot of reasons. I have a really great interview to bring you. So a lot of you will remember the original format of Dan's Dabble and Babble was that this was an interview podcast, and I would talk with somebody from a different industry each week, one that I knew very little about, and just kind of take it from there and see where the conversation goes. So when I started this podcast back up after the hiatus and decided to take this all by myself before I had my brother acting as my producer, and he would be instrumental in finding the guests, which was wonderful at the time. But the freedom to be able to do everything by myself has been wonderful, and I've really been enjoying kind of my one-offs, my solo episodes as well. So my new vision, I've got several interviews lined up, so at least for the next few weeks, I hope to maintain that format, and I hope to make that a much more regular thing, because I do genuinely love talking to people from different backgrounds and hearing their stories. And the interview process to me is just a lot of fun, and I get to talk to a lot of really unique people. That was one of the things that I loved about doing the podcast initially, but I really love just kind of, you know, sharing my life and sharing my perspective with you. So this week we're going to try kind of the new format. We're going to start, I'm going to wax poetically, and then we'll get to the interview, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But my goodness, you ever have those moments where you just kind of sit back and you reflect on how charmed your life can be? And I understand how annoying that sounds. You know, we all go through periods, we're all going through stuff. But, you know, I've just been really fortunate in so many ways. And as I mentioned several times, I was really looking forward to this trip to Mexico. And, you know, I talked about my trip back home to Indiana on the last episode of the podcast. And, you know, this holiday season, it was really, you know, the big, big moment was going to be this trip to Mexico, right? And, you know, when I was in Indiana, I had a little bit of a tickle in my throat, and that made me really nervous because, you know, of course, Omicron is raging right now. But, you know, kind of adding to that, to travel internationally, to return to the United States, to get into Mexico, they'll take literally anybody. There's no restrictions to get into Mexico. At least when we went, there were no restrictions. But to get back into the States, you have to have a negative COVID test the day before you travel. So I was a little trepidatious about what would happen if I got stuck in Mexico. But luckily, there were no problems getting back to the States. We both tested negative. I can't even describe the euphoria. It was, you know, it was some cruel irony. So when we went to get the COVID test, which they did at the resort, of course, like, I'm in the middle of filling out my registration form for the COVID test, and the Wi-Fi for the resort went out for everybody in the room. So finally my boyfriend was like, okay, I'm going to turn on data roaming. I mean, we have to do this. So, we did that, but then the data didn't come back on. And so finally we're sitting at lunch and it's like, we have to check for our results. And so we got our results, and getting that negative test, so euphoric. Also sitting at this beachside restaurant, looking at this just incredible view, was wonderful. But I have to say, so going on this trip, kind of, you know, we were going and all week there had been all of these reports about all of the flights that were getting canceled and all of the people that were stranded. And my boyfriend was sending me these articles, and I'm like, stop looking at these articles. The only thing that's going to do is stress you out. And I was stressed too. I mean, like, obviously we wanted to get down there. We wanted to get back. But you know, flying can be so frustrating because it's completely out of your hands, and that can be vulnerable and annoying, but you know, it is what it is ultimately. So fortunately, on the way down, we had no issues whatsoever. We got on, we had a layover in Miami, ate at a TGI Fridays in the airport, and we're on our way to Mexico. And our resort was very close to the hotel. So resort was very close to the airport. So once we got there, getting to the resort was easy, and we had enough time to get some food, get some drinks, kind of explore. And, you know, it's just, I haven't done much international travel. I've been to Brazil in the past. So going to Mexico, checking another country off the list was really cool. And, you know, just that first night in Mexico, that first night of vacation, it's just like, it was just so nice to be there. So I had been looking forward to it so much. And, you know, it was just really a really special moment, and really special trip, to be able to share that experience. And then, you know, it's my boyfriend and I have traveled together before, and we really like to maximize our time when we travel. Traveling is something we both really enjoy, but the trips that we've taken have not been relaxing trips. They've been wonderful trips, but certainly not relaxing. So to be at this all-inclusive resort and just lay on the beach, and, you know, have access to the all you can drink, all you can eat. It was really, really just exactly what I think both of us needed. We've both had incredibly busy seasons at work, so to be able to just sit back, unwind, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And, you know, it really... one question that I have for people who go to these resorts is, all of the chairs that were by the pool were completely taken, but then all of the chairs that were on the beach, which the beach had great access to restaurants, great access to the bars and everything, and the view of the Gulf was incredible. I think most times we counted 6 shades of blue. The water was so clear, so beautiful. And, you know, that view was just breathtaking. It can't... I, of course, can't capture it in words, but to relax and enjoy that experience was wonderful. And then the food was honestly pretty good. You never know what you're going to get with a place like that. But the first day we had sushi for lunch, it was really just phenomenal. And then there was a swim-up bar that was, again, right on the beach overlooking the Gulf. Just, I mean, you can't ask for a better vibe, truly. It was so magnificent. And then the next day so on the 31st, we went to Chichen Itza, which was a wonderful excursion. It was a really long excursion. We had to be up at like 7:15, or we had to be on the bus at 7:15. And I am a morning person. You know, on vacation, I would like to sleep in, but, you know, that's fine. I have to give my boyfriend credit, though. He is not a morning person at all, but he was a real trooper on this trip, and really handled the mornings exceptionally well. And, you know, it was a very long bus ride to Chichen Itza, but it's one of the 7 wonders of the world. You know, it was absolutely worth it. It was so cool to walk around the grounds of Chichen Itza and hear about the history, hear about the various temples that they've uncovered, and kind of go through the past, you know. Then after Chichen Itza, we went to a cenote, which is really just a sinkhole, but it was you know, you're deep in this limestone cave, basically. The water is very refreshing. You jump in and there's just all of these vines that are reaching toward the water. And just a very surreal, nice moment. It was so refreshing on a very hot day. Very cool experience to have. You know, I was very glad that was a part of the tour. The tour also included a lunch at a Mayan village. Food really was not that great. That part of the tour got kind of long. I mean, it was our tour guide really kind of leaned into talking about aligning your chakras and all of that. And, you know, I want to be respectful of, you know, the tour guide's culture and all of that, but it just kind of took a really weird slant, and we were tired. We were wanting to go home. And then on the way back, we stopped at a mestizo colonial village, which was a really cute town. Really cute town square. Walked around for a little bit, got some ice cream. And then that night we got back to the resort at about 7:30, and we had signed up for the resort's New Year's party, which we thought was going to be kind of hokey, and I think we both thought it was going to be maybe a little lame, but, you know, it was something to do on New Year's, and it ended up being so much fun. The food was phenomenal. There were crab legs. There was a full-on roast pig. The desserts were great. Amazing cheesecake, amazing tres leches cake. So really incredible food. Of course, we're at an all-inclusive resort, so drinks were flowing aplenty. But then the entertainment, the theme was New Year's around the world. So the performers performed different cultural dances and songs from around the world, which, you know, I kind of had the thought that we talk a lot about cultural appropriation in the States. It was very, very much that, I feel, but it was all really respectful. So I would argue that it was certainly cultural appreciation. But you know, they went to France and did the can-can and some Cirque du Soleil stuff. Like, there was a guy that spun in the silks, and it was you know, the entertainment had no right to be that good, and that went to midnight. At midnight, we were told that there was going to be fireworks on the beach. So, you know, we did our New Year's thing in the ballroom that we were in. They gave us these sparkler things that we couldn't figure out how to light. We were trying to light the wrong side. Eventually, we did light them and had our fun with our sparklers, went out to the beach and had our New Year's moment. On the beach, which was, you know, I'm a big fan of New Year's on the beach, and excuse me, a big fan of New Year's on the beach. So that was, you know, a year ago never would have guessed, never would have imagined that I would have been in Mexico with my boyfriend to ring in the new year. But I mean, start of 2022. 10 out of 10. Could not ask for a better trip. And then, you know, the final day we had more time on the beach. And I don't know. It was time that I'm really thankful for. I had an amazing time, an incredible time. And, you know, not everybody can be so lucky. And I recognize how fortunate I am to have had that time and have had that experience. And I just absolutely loved it. And, you know, getting back, all in all, again, with all of the flights that got canceled, we got pretty lucky. But traveling with my boyfriend and I is never straightforward. It's never easy. There's always a problem. So we get to the Cancun airport in plenty of time. That was largely because the resort kind of dictates when you have to leave. So we got to the airport, plenty of time, and our flight from Cancun gets delayed, which, okay, so we have a connector in St. Louis. So we land at about 2:30, and our connector is supposed to leave at 3:20. So luckily, they let everybody that had our connector get off the flight first so we could go through customs first. Well, in St. Louis, after you go through customs, you have to leave the terminal and wait on a bus to get to the other terminal where the connector was. It's 19 degrees. My boyfriend and I are in shorts and a t-shirt because, hi, we were just in Mexico. We live in Florida. We knew we had a layover in St. Louis, but we didn't think we would be experiencing the weather of St. Louis. We got on the bus to go to the other terminal. We tried to express to the bus driver that we were in a hurry to not miss our flight. He could not have cared less. He was dramatic when we stood up before he stopped and kind of reprimanded us, saying, "Yeah, you gotta wait for me to stop the bus." And it's like, okay, well then stop the bus, step on the brakes. We've got places to go. Because then we had to go through security again. And all of my Midwestern values, all of my Midwestern manners went out the window because I was getting through security. So on your ticket, it says that the doors close 15 minutes before you're scheduled to depart. So I'm running through the airport. I haven't even put my shoes on. Of course, we are at the very end of the terminal. We get to the gate, and there's not even a goddamn plane. Because the plane that we were leaving on was the same plane that we came in on. And the conveyor belt to take the luggage off of the plane broke. So it was delayed for over an hour. But they didn't update the app or any of the boards or anything to indicate that was delayed. So for a while, we were like, can we get food or what? And it also would have been nice to know that we didn't have to rush and panic and think that we were going to miss our flight. But anyway, we were able to get food, which was a good thing. And then we ended up getting back to Tampa at about 9 o'clock. And again, we made it home, So it's can't complain. Really, it was just, of course, traveling with us was stressful because traveling with us is never going to be straightforward, never going to be easy. But seriously, the all-inclusive resort thing, now, we could have used another day, I think, but we really ate at all of the restaurants, so I think any more time, it would have kind of gotten old. And, you know, I don't know, but how old can sitting on a beach and drinking and relaxing really get? It was, I mean, amazing vacation. I am so happy that we did it. I just, again, wouldn't trade it for the world. So happy to share that experience with my listeners. Now, pivoting a little bit, I am so excited. You know, the interview that I'm sharing with you today is with a man named Darren Charles, and didn't really know much about Darren before this interview, but really just had a wonderful time getting to know him, a wonderful time talking to him, had such a fun time interviewing him. So I hope that comes through in the interview, and I hope you enjoy Darren's perspective and Darren's story. So now I present to you my interview with Darren Charles. Please follow me on Twitter at Babbling Dan. Follow me on Instagram at Daniel Burkett. And enjoy the interview. Thank you. And welcome, Dan's Dabble in Babble listeners, to another exciting week here. This week, we are joined by someone who has a really interesting career history and career trajectory that's going to share kind of his experience. We're joined this week by Darren Charles. So, Darren, welcome. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. If you could, why don't you just briefly introduce yourself to my audience, tell us where you are, where you've been, and we'll take it from there.
Great. Hi, listeners. And Dan, thank you so much for having me. I think this is a great opportunity for us to connect. I know we have a little bit of a similarity in our background, which perhaps we'll get to. And so my background is athletics predominantly. I was one of those kids that had a great deal of success early on. And even as a young kid, I found sports as an outlet for my life. And it eventually became a platform for me to, or a vehicle for me to move from, you know, one stage of my life to the next. And so I was fortunate to play college football at the University of Wisconsin. I was able to reach a dream by touching the NFL, and then had some transitions, you know, through those stages into my pursuit of acting and self-expression. So it's been a very unique journey, and just really excited to share that with you.
Definitely. And we definitely overlap with the Wisconsin experience. We were both educated there. Now, are you originally from the Midwest, or did you just end up in the Midwest for college? What's your background?
Yeah, I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, okay. So when you talk about the cold, I don't even have a leg to stand on with you. I'm originally from Indiana. I got as far north as Milwaukee. That was cold enough for me.
But I think that's really about as cold as it gets. Although, you know, we know Green Bay, Wisconsin has the, you know, the frozen tundra term, but you know, my experiences, whether it's St. Paul, Minnesota, swinging to Milwaukee or down to Chicago, you know, even Indiana, it's pretty brutal.
It is. I mean, and for me, what I always try to explain to people too, is there's the cold, the wind, the snow, that's part of it. One difference for me I was kind of more on the southern half of Indiana, so winters were slightly more mild and definitely shorter. So one thing that really alarmed me in Milwaukee was just, you know, how long the season is, and it gets to February, March, April, and you just never really know when the warmth is coming. But the other aspect is it gets dark at like 4:30 in Wisconsin, and it's right. So, and in the day it's gray, you just never see the sun. That was just a lot. The seasonal depression is very real, which I'm sure
very real. Yeah, and then you add in that cold, and you know, the desire to kind of hunker down. It's it takes tough character to live in that space, that environment. So,
and so us talking a little bit before, you like me fled the brutal cold winters. We kind of fled in different directions. You're in LA now, correct?
Yeah. I'm enjoying the warm weather here. You know, yeah,
I was going to say, so what's, how long have you been there?
I've been here in LA now. I believe 10 years now, 10 years, basically sitting on my 11th now. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically from LA, I guess, you know, for the people that are out here and who've lived, because mostly it's transient folks who've come from everywhere else in the country. And it tends to be, you know, unique to run into somebody actually from LA. So I guess I've reached the mark now where it's, oh, you're from here. You are that, whatever that is.
Yeah. So no looking back. Do you think leaving LA is in the cards for you at all at any point?
Yeah. I think the more that I'm allowing life to kind of come and pursue the endeavors that I'd like, I think LA is certainly a stage of where I'm at. You know, years ago, I felt that I wanted to push away from my previous history or those circumstances that I was in, just to see what else was out in the world. And, you know, it wasn't easy to make that decision to strike out. I love my family dearly, and a lot of the things that I do are for them and my extended family, and, you know, also to inspire people as well. And, you know, as time has passed and I've settled into my life a little bit more, and while I'm still striving, I'm in a more balanced space. And so I'm more endeared back to the Midwest. And I think of, you know, being in Chicago and, you know, obviously spending more time with family. But that's, you know, if I look to the future, it would be, you know, maybe another big market like New York, or we'll just see what happens.
Sure. That's really interesting to hear your perspective on that, because for me, you know, in my family from Indiana, even going to Milwaukee, that was really striking out, but I was still, you know, within driving distance. So then when I moved to St. Petersburg, Florida, I feel like, and this is my second year here, so I'm still relatively recent transplant, but I really felt like kind of what you were talking about is I really discovered who I really am. I mean, there's something about removing yourself from everything that you grew up with, and you kind of start to come into your own a little bit. I mean, it just never happened for me the way it did. Basically, as soon as I moved to St. Pete, and there's a number of circumstances that have helped there. And I gotta say, the weather is a big selling point for me. I don't know if I can ever think about making a permanent move any more northerly than I am now. So, but again, it's a you know, never say never. You just gotta follow where life takes you.
Yeah. And I think it takes courage. And so I would commend you, you know, for doing that as well. I think anytime you're pushing out into spaces you're a little bit unsure of, and, you know, it requires so much of yourself to, you know, settle in, make sure that you have, you know, your job and building new communities and doing those things. So I think that movement out away from what's comfortable kind of reveals more to yourself and allows you to see who you are in comparison to the world and kind of set your own space. And, you know, as you mentioned, right, we take a look back at this weather. And I know I've had the thought, I've thought, how are people living like this? Because once you acclimate to your current circumstances, then you begin to think, well, how was that possible before? And at least that's how it was for me. And now I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm really endeared to those memories and those experiences that I have. So it's a mix of nostalgia as well as just appreciation.
You know, you say that, but then I was in Indiana for the holidays, and you know, it was by Indiana terms, it was a mild, the weather was mild while I was there, but it was tough for me. But you talked about building community, and I think that's one thing that I really discounted, and you know, I'm really glad that I kind of had the impulse to just go and kind of say, okay, I'm committing to this move, I'm committing to this place, and not really think about a lot of the logistics and not really thinking about I'm moving to this place where I know nobody, which I had done, you know, when I went to grad school, but I still had the kind of safety net of there were other people in my program that were going to, you know, naturally be contacts and become friends that way. And that I think is so hard, especially for a young adult or anybody that makes a move, is to really connect with a new place, connect with that community. So especially from your perspective as an athlete, you know, I was also someone who growing up, I was involved in athletics. I was a swimmer. In college, I was a cheerleader. So, you know, that is certainly kind of gives you a built-in community right there. So then kind of you're taking that to another level with your football community. So what was that experience of just kind of figuring out who your people were when you were no longer as intimately connected to the athletic community as you had been?
Yeah, I remember distinctly that, you know, the big transition when I stepped away from the NFL and more or less ended in this space where I didn't even know where I was moving forward into. I was basically more or less kind of existing. I believe in the first 6 months that I finished playing, I lost about 10 pounds of muscle. So my body had gone through a very quick transition from being, you know, muscular and strong to a bit more lean, looking more like a basketball player. I'm 6'6". So, you know, losing, I kind of looked like a basketball player anyway, but even more so, I was just this tall, lean guy at that point. So looking in the mirror, I had a physical transition. And then I was left in the space mentally with everything that I had built up until that point, which is the recognition or the accolades or the activities that I was participating in, they were no longer available to me. And so I couldn't butt myself up against those things to, you know, measure my worth or my contribution in the community. And so that was kind of the beginning of some of the mental and physical challenges that existed. Of course, there's a lot more. I think anyone who's been around long enough and follows perhaps sports knows that, you know, transitions are automatically difficult, not even just because of the financial aspects, right? Because we know a lot of athletes transition out and they'll struggle financially as well. So yeah, I went through all of those things. And I quickly found myself in a space of just trying to stabilize my world and assess where I was at. And so that sent me then basically on an adventure, because everything was unknown from that point on. And you know, and to really clarify with the community aspect, I lost my community in a way. I knew that I had put this part of my life to rest, and I was committed to allowing that to, you know, to close that door. And so while I may have in my head thought I would close that door and move on, my identity still was directly connected to all of those experiences.
I think that's really interesting that you bring up that identity point too, because I think so much of, you know, for my own self, a lot of my identity was rooted in the academic side of things. And so, you know, the move that I made, I made a pretty abrupt career change as well. So then there's the identity component there as well, that I think that is something that is really an intangible until all of a sudden it isn't. And so as you're kind of talking about your transition from playing college football to the NFL to then all of a sudden removing that football identity, was that something that you were cognizantly aware of as you were kind of making the decision to move on to the next phase of your life? Or was that more of kind of, I think as it is for so many people, kind of just a slap across the face that, oh, I'm not even sure what it means to not be a part of this anymore?
Wow, that's a really great question. And I think there's a lot of each of those things in that circumstance. you know, it being, first of all, just a very competitive world, and it has to be something that is part of every breath you take, right? It's like in every cell, right? It's in everything that you do. And you get to that point through your repetitions and your trials and your failures and things like that. And it slowly creeps into the essence of really who you are. I would say that as I began to grow mentally through the second half of my college years, and I started to assess and begin to understand more of who I was, I started running into this idea of who do I want to be? And the big question for me was not knowing what my inner world was. I had given so much to the external world. And, you know, just to touch on that, being a three-sport athlete all through high school and succeeding very well in all three of those and having a lot of options in terms of secondary education.
What other sports did you play?
I track and field, I high jump, long jump, triple jump, and then basketball as well. Just utilizing the height, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think for me, there was certainly an awareness of my circumstances and ultimately who I wanted to become. And I had a decision to make, and it was a fork in the road. So it wasn't out of left field, but it, you know, I think everyone can understand it. You know, we feel things, transitions coming into our life. We feel changes coming upon us. And as much as we think we're ready for them, or we're prepared, or we're easing into it, once that, you know, we'll call it a Band-Aid, once the Band-Aid's pulled or that moment presents itself, you're not really any better off or worse because you had an idea that it was coming. You still have to deal with the fullness of the moment. So did you have experiences like that in terms of your transitions out of sports, or even, you know, making the move? Did you have a, you know, this transition, this period that really
for you? The big thing for me, being a competitive swimmer, all of a sudden I really discounted in the moment how much of my community was surrounding swimming. So all of a sudden, when I wasn't swimming competitively anymore, you know, I really didn't think that I was going to miss the competition as much as I did. You know, swimming is one of those sports. It's very grueling. You know, you talk to swimmers in the moment, and you know, the practices are terrible. They're early mornings. It's a winter sport in Indiana. So I'm at school at 6 a.m. all winter. It's like, by the time I walk out of the pool and get to my car, my hair is frozen type of thing. So it's like, there was a lot of it that I was really focused on the positives of making the decision. You know, I had the opportunity to swim a few different places at the undergrad level, but ended up getting a full academic scholarship. And, you know, I was like, I don't want to have to swim anymore. So I went the academic route, and then really kind of made that decision somewhat impulsively. And that was the real tough transition was, you know, where do I make friends now? How do I connect with other people if it's not through this competitive lens, through competitive swimming? So that was definitely a big part of it. But then again, as I kind of alluded to, the academic drive was really kind of at least equal to my athletic competition drive. So that was very much still a part of my identity there. Mm-hmm. I guess, talk to me. So having the opportunity to play football at UW-Madison in the Big Ten is incredible. And I mean, the opportunities that in itself brings is, you know, you can't really put a value on. I mean, of course, you've got the college education piece, but it's so much more than that. Just anybody who has had the opportunity to do college athletics at any level, it's just a special connection that you have to your university and to your sport to be able to do that. So kind of when you were going through the program at UW-Madison, when did you realize, did you always have the thought that the NFL could be in the cards for you, or how did you balance that? Because, you know, it's certainly not a guarantee. There's a million things that could happen to derail. How focused on that goal were you, or when did it become real to you that the NFL was going to be a real possibility for you?
Well, Football, actually, coincidentally, wasn't even on my radar until maybe just before my senior year. It would have been my junior high school fall season. And, you know, I randomly became good. I was this, you know, 6'3" my freshman year and had this 3-inch growth spurt. So I shot up to 6'6" and I was very, very thin. I was like a weed. I was like 6'6", 175 pounds. So I don't know if anybody can imagine what that looks like, but so I was just uncomfortably like underweight. I didn't have strength. In fact, in my sophomore year, the previous year, I was like Bambi on the field. My legs were sliding around everywhere. So, you know, I put some weight on and committed to growing into my body as any young man kind of would. And then suddenly out of nowhere, these opportunities started to present themselves. So it was kind of my circumstance said, hey, maybe this is for you now. And as much as I had focused my entire life on basketball, you know, football became this thing for me at that moment. So that's when I decided to pursue that, like, hey, maybe this is my thing. And, you know, as my years progressed in the Big Ten, I mean, what a great opportunity for me in terms of getting an education. I think I went on just a handful of visits, even. It might have been my second one, and I was at the University of Wisconsin and made that decision. And it remains today to be one of the best decisions that I made, especially in terms of the alumni network, education, these values that come in the Midwest. And for me, having, as a young kid, having had such a strong connection to sports through my father and my mother and being recognized in that way, I had already built within me this desire to pursue sports because it had already given me so much in terms of recognition and courage and things. And then as I moved into the high school years and having success across multiple sports, I knew that this would be my thing. And so as I moved into college, then I wasn't really hanging my hat on wanting to hit the NFL. I knew that I desperately wanted to be great at the things that I was doing. And I had this goal of reaching the NFL, but I would come to find a little bit later on that perhaps I didn't set my goal high enough, that setting the goal just simply at the NFL, I had accomplished that, but I hadn't created this vision for something much further along, you know, a Hall of Famer or the best of all time, which could have provided me with a little bit more to continue that pursuit. But and then to get more specific, because I know you asked me and I'm kind of jumping around here a little bit, painting a picture, but I would say maybe around my junior year in college, I started to feel that perhaps I had the skills necessary, that I was maybe underutilized at the University of Wisconsin while I felt like I was contributing, you know, well also. And then the scouts kind of came knocking my senior year. I didn't get drafted. I went through the 2 days of the draft and it didn't quite work out, but I never felt bummed. I just knew it was going to happen for me. And then I got the call the following day. So, you know, I did it. I reached it and I touched the first dream. So
that's beautiful. So talk to me a little bit more about that. So what was your experience with the NFL? Who called?
So it was the Chicago Bears was the team that I ended up.
You were just really, really dedicated to this Midwest thing.
I mean, that I couldn't win for the life of me being raised in St. Paul, Minnesota. And, you know, I grew up with the Vikings and
of course,
you know,
yeah.
My older brother's a fan of the Vikings and, you know, my mother's family's from Wisconsin near Green Bay, actually Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So, you know, it was cheesehead country. And then of course I get picked up by the Bears. So, you know, I would get it from every angle. Really, I couldn't win.
I was going to say, how much are they holding that against you? You can never live that down.
No, exactly. And it's even harder afterwards when you love the Chicago Bears because they gave you an opportunity to live your dream. But, you know, you're in Brett Favre country and Sterling Sharp and Reggie White and all these other iconic names. And of course, Wisconsin or Minnesota has theirs as well. So it's just fun to play with in that world, right? It's a rich community. So,
yeah, no, that's amazing. And of course, it would have to be the Bears and not, I don't know, the Ravens or the Browns or somebody more neutral to a Green Bay or Vikings fan. Yeah, that's incredible. So, okay. So then walk me through, you have this amazing opportunity with the NFL. What was it like to realize that dream first off, and then what kind of led you to the decision to then kind of give that up and move on to the next phase of your life?
Mm, That experience was truly incredible. It was an emotional moment. It's spending time with my immediate family, and you know, we're all in the living room, and you know, your agent's on the line, and you're just waiting patiently because this is something that, you know, everybody has rallied around, right? Your siblings have helped out. They've encouraged you. You know, your parents have, you know, sacrificed so much. My mother sacrificed so much to give me this opportunity. And of course, so many people in the community, whether it was, you know, Oshkosh, Minnesota, et cetera. So there's a lot of, you know, the people that care about you and believe in you are also part of that experience. And so getting that phone call, and it's like a breath of fresh air. It's a feeling of, I made it, a stamp of validation in some ways that you are capable, and somebody sees that in you, that seed. And so quickly thereafter, I ended up going to mini camps down in Illinois area. And I got out there and I went through the process, and it's quite amazing to hold something in such reverence. And it really wouldn't matter if it was any other team, because this is the NFL. And so it was the Chicago Bears, and it's looking at their emblem, seeing your helmet, you know, your jersey with your name on it, and you're signing your contracts, and you're with your people, and you're gathering all these parts of you to prepare to move into this new journey. And it was very quickly while I was in camps that I started to realize that perhaps this dream wasn't only for me. And I didn't quite know what that meant at the time. I started having this feeling that perhaps there was another route in life that I was meant to head down. Mm-hmm. And there was a bit of a separation between where I was at and living in that experience. I started to see myself outside of myself and thinking, is this where I want to be in 5 and 10 years? And if I continue down this path, will I be the person that I want to be? And does this feel true and real to me? And those questions became more pronounced as time progressed. But, you know, in that mini camp, I realized that, that I should be heading in another direction. And
I mean, really, really big questions.
Yeah, huge questions, unintended questions. You know, here I am. I'm 23 years old, and you know, you could say for 16 of those years it was sports, and that was my connection and identity and the things that I was doing. And I was, you know, given all these great opportunities up until this point. And you know, why am I seeing it in a new light and in this new way? And I started to feel that I had become something that wasn't the truest form of me. And leading up, you know, through my junior year of college, as we kind of touched on earlier, and up until this point now, I'm wondering who I am. I had really provided so much to the world in terms of like my actions, but I felt this sense of unknowingness on the other half of who I was. And it became important for me to explore that.
Definitely. So let's shift gears a little bit here. And I mean, your story is really interesting. And I think is, you know, so many universal themes in there, but so you've been living in LA, this is about your 11th year. So tell me what you're up to now. How do you spend your time? What gets you excited? What are your hobbies? What do you do in LA? Where's your community now? Where's your identity now?
Yeah, I love that. I spent some time going on an adventure after that. After that, the game of sports had changed for me. I thought, you know, it was going to be hard for me to create a new identity for myself if I was going to have such close proximity to, you know, this broad network that I had been a part of. And so it was important for me to leave the Midwest area. And I was unsure of what I really wanted to do next. I mean, little did I know that I had this deep-seated idea of wanting to entertain, be in the entertainment industry. I looked at the East Coast and kind of swung south through Texas. And then I thought, you know, Las Vegas, well, if I'm going all the way out there, let's do California. So I didn't know exactly where my compass was pointing. I just had this idea that I needed to be in this space. So I thought, you know, California was the furthest thing that I thought was possible for me. and decided to make that venture. So yeah, that would have been around 2009. And then from there, it was just exploring life. I spent some time bartending. I did that for several years and, you know, doing nightlife and restaurants and poolside things and seeing how people were living their life and what activities were going on, dabbling with auditioning and modeling, et cetera. And those were challenging feats. Again, it's like stepping out into the world and realizing you're trying new things and you're not where you need to be yet. So that stirred up a lot of emotions inside of me in terms of, you know, whether it was fear or uncertainty or the need to develop new skills. And so that's what the past several years have been like. And as I've invested more into the pursuit of self-expression, which is very important to me for a number of reasons, I'm starting to find my place in the market, in the entertainment industry. So I'm pursuing acting. I do a number of things. You know, I laugh because I do hand modeling even. That's got to, you know, that makes everybody laugh. I knew I had to you stop
can't,
there.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can't continue on. So how does one get their break in hand modeling? And so I am also kind of chuckling as you're saying this. One, I think, you know, it's just so relatable as I'm in my late 20s now. And, you know, when you're kind of in your early to mid 20s, you're just so impatient. You want things to happen right away. And one thing that I did in grad school, you commented on the photo before this started. So that was actually from my brief modeling days. I was an eyeglass model.
Okay. I mean, those are great glasses.
Those glasses in that picture, and for those listening, it's the same glasses that are in the cover art of my podcast. But these are actually custom made by a designer. That was the only compensation I got for eyeglass modeling, which I thought was incredible. I had a photographer work with me and give me modeling lessons that I've put to use exactly zero times since then. That's not true. You know, my photos now, just candid photos, look phenomenal because I know what to do with my jaw.
Right. He's got that. So if you take a look at the picture, he's got like this 1,000-yard, you know, soft eye kind of stare into the distance. And it's quite nice, actually. I complimented him earlier. So. You get some free gear. So it's great. You know?
But no one. I don't want to brag, but I want to say that I've got some pretty decent hands. So maybe I'm missing out on something. So help me. How did you get your hands out there?
Yeah, strange thing. I think, you know, necessity breeds opportunity, right? So sometimes being in circumstances and looking where you can grow, what areas are available to me to, you know, pursue something. And I think that's one of the things about growth in general is really working our edges. And this was one of those experiences. I can tell you I've broken several bones in both of my hands. I've had my pinkies both dangling off. And so there's a little bit of calcium buildup. And it's an odd thing that several years later that I'm even able to do the hand modeling thing. So
apparently the rugged look is in for the hands.
Well, yeah, especially now. I think that's encouraging for everybody, especially anyone who's listening. I think the marketplace is opening up for real people and whatever you define as real, or even things outside of the spectrum of what was the standard. And I don't think anybody ever told me anything about my hands. I just, I responded to a call.
So yeah. What kind of a campaign calls for a hand model? What are some products that you've modeled?
Okay. Well, it's easy now because everything's going digital online. So, you know, if you're, you know, it could be alcohol and spirits brands, you know, shaking up a bottle, shaking up a drink or something. And all you see is the hands and it, you know, a beverage pouring into the glass and it's for a specific brand. I've worked with companies like Staples, using like a Rolodex, and they're, you know, selling other products. I've done KFC, you know, holding on to fries, dipping fries for a couple hours.
This should have been the entire interview, Darren. You really buried the lead with this student athlete transition shtick. Yeah. This is what this has all been building to. Now I certainly don't want to imply anything, and I don't want to open up anything, but I'm going to go there anyway. Okay. Do you ever feel self-conscious that these people just want you for your hands? Are you ever worry what that says about the rest of what you have to offer.
Oh my goodness. You know, I think that, well, for myself, because I know that I have other things to offer and I feel confident in those things or have exercised myself in other spaces, I feel more than confident to just show up and just stick an arm into the screen, right?
Listen, you don't have to justify anything for me. My entire MO is I will do almost anything if somebody's writing me a check for it. There's no shame. Okay, there are a lot of moral limits there, Darren. Let's not get carried away.
I think we're all glad you said
shifting nervously in his seat over there, wondering what direction this interview is going. Yeah. But no, that's phenomenal. NFL player, college football player, and hand model Darren Charles, everybody. So now I know that you, I believe you also have a podcast. So would you like to tell my audience about what you have to offer there?
Sure. Yeah. So what I'm focused on doing at this point is reaching out and giving back to the communities and older versions of who I was. And what that looks like is young athletes, whether they're in high school or even younger, getting in front of them, as well as college student athletes, those particularly who are in transition, those who are, you know, played in high school and don't have college in their future, engaging with them, having conversations, as well as athletes who have desired to live that first dream and get to the NFL or even, you know, the XFL, which is another great opportunity that's presented now by Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And
is the XFL coming back?
Yeah. So he had purchased it with his former wife and business partner. And I think they're holding mini camps like a couple days under a year from now. So they're going to start filling the teams. Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah. So more opportunities for those who are ready to, you know, get out there and live their dream. And for those who aren't able to do that, who miss those opportunities, talking to them and helping them realize that while that first dream may not have been reached, there are several more dreams to focus on and have intentions and to move you through the world so that they're not going back to old situations that aren't, you know, helping them grow. The opportunities that sports pulled them out of and insulated them and nourished them and gave them a sense of community and held them to specific standards, they can build upon that and continue to transition in other more positive ways. So really what I'm doing is just getting in front of student athletes and speaking, going to high schools, anywhere somebody's willing to hear me. And that includes, you know, talking with you, Dan.
Well, I so appreciate it. This has been such a fun conversation. You know, you never know what you're going to get when, you know, I had your bio that former football player that was now pursuing acting, producing in LA. I mean, this could have gone a million different directions, but now I've got some insight into the hand modeling world. And that is worth its weight in gold, my friend.
Yeah. And you know what, there's plenty of more to discuss. So maybe if it's down the road, we revisit some other things and have some more fun in the conversation. I know it was really about letting everyone get to know me a bit, but yeah, I'd love to talk with you more.
Yeah, definitely. You are welcome back anytime here, Darren. This has been, like I said, a lot of fun. I don't have any other way to characterize this other than a lot of fun. So thank you, absolutely, sir, for
yes,
having fun with me tonight.
I love it. I love the babble.
All right. We're going to clip that for our promos for sure. Darren Charles loves the babble. Well, thank you. If you want to give your Instagram or Twitter or any place for my babblers to babble along and follow you.
Absolutely. The best way to reach me right now is going to be on my Instagram. It's darren.charles, darrin.charles. Check out some of my photos. I got a link in the bio that will take you to my other interests. I would like to say I've started a book club as well that I've been doing for the last year, where I'm posting content from books that I've read And I'm also using those as resources to help in terms of masculine leadership and for those who need community and resources to tackle the issues that they're facing. So I also, you know, provide those to student athletes as well. And, you know, if it's something about speaking or engaging, I'm happy to do it and just simply say hello. I'm a friendly guy.
And on that note, if you had to give one book recommendation.
I am currently reading Simon Sinek's book called Start With Why. And the reason why this book is so incredible is because it asks you to understand who you are and why you are pursuing the things that you're doing in your own life, to get clearer about those aspects. So what it does is it asks of you to understand what your past experiences were and help bring that into a cohesive version of where you're at currently, so that anything you do from the current point of where you're at, whether you're trying to start a business, whether you're trying to engage with people in the market, be on podcasts, if you want to do music, sports, anything, you have this why. And this why is this knowing, and it's the fuel that will propel you through anything that you want to accomplish. So that's the book. That's the one.
Well, that is phenomenal. Thank you. You're clearly very self-reflective, very refreshing, as well as fun this conversation has been. So thank you again for joining us. And to my listeners, until next time, this has been another week of Dan's Dabble and Babble.